Okay, he's column one. Okay, give me some stuff in column two. What are you angry about?
That he had an affair, that he left the country, that he's a kid.
We got some stuff going on here.
He's a child. He's irresponsible. Let's see, what else?
Okay, let's back up a minute. You said the first one, the first reason was what?
He had an affair.
Okay, I need someone to play the wife. Come here and play the wife. Just stand back behind here. Now, when I ask you to play a role, here's what I want you to think about. You're in a one-act play, and you got one role. You're the wife, period. You don't know any of the rest of these characters in this play with you. You have one role. It's the wife only. So when I ask you for a response, I want you to give me a response that a wife would give. Okay? Yeah, well, yes. So any response you give me is going to be the response of a wife, okay? Now, let's see. Pick someone to, let's see, he had an affair. The wife is different from your sexuality. It's a whole other deal, right? So pick someone to represent your sexuality.
Oh, you want me to pick one?
Yes.
Okay. Does that have to be a woman or can you be a man?
I don't care. It's your inventory and your life. pick someone. Okay, come on up. We'll call this the. Oh, now she has a resentment, right? So this is her sexuality. Call it the sex kitten. Call it whatever. Her sexual energy. You got to understand what. The first thing she's writing in column two is the husband had an affair, correct? So when I ask you for a response, what defines you is your sexual energy, how you perform in bed, blah, 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 right? Boy, see, she's having a hard time here. Right? She's having a hard time. Okay, let me think. Did this impact your children?
Oh, yes.
Okay. So we need, okay, we got, yeah, pick the mother. The mother's different than the wife. You get it? See, you ladies have had split personalities for a long time. So we pick a mama. She's, oh, she has that look, though, doesn't she? Come on. Okay. All right, pick someone else. Okay, and you just go ahead and stand there. So again, when all this information comes up, your response is going to be strictly that of the mother, right? You're the mother, and I want the response I'm going to want from you is how this impacts you as the mother. You don't know about the sexual energy, and you don't know about the wife. You don't care. You got one role in this one-act play, right? Okay. Now, what other things did you say in the second column?
Well, there's my spiritual. The second column we're talking about.
Oh well, yeah. Let's stick with this. Okay. I want to show you. This is good. This is one piece of inventory, and I want to show you what she has been up against. And I know some of her history. She's been up against this a long time. Now we pick someone to play the spiritual woman. Ah, yeah. It's always interesting who they pick. That's always kind of interesting. Now you've got Zena. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Find a Zena. Find an angry woman. Ah. Oh. She says, oh, who, me? Angry? Yeah. Okay. Squeeze in here.
Is Zena the equivalent of Rambo, but
yes.
Female?
Uh-huh. Yeah. So your role within this multiple personality disorder is your role is to protect and defend. Period. Correct? You're that female Xena part. You've got one too, so you know what I'm talking about. So when I translate when you get this information that's going to roll in, what I'm going to want from you is your reaction to that as Xena, right? Okay, what else? So what do we got? We got Xena. We got the mother. We have that the sexuality. We have the wife. And we have the spiritual woman.
Where's Miss AA?
We don't. Well, we're calling her the spiritual woman, Miss AA. And then, huh? Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. Pick a career woman.
I'm never emailing you again.
How did you find out about the affair?
My business partner told me.
Ooh. Oh, no. Ouch, ouch. Oh, no. Let's see. Now,
Mark has a nose for who to pick in the chair, doesn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, yeah. And, yeah, what did you do?
Retaliation is always a good way for revenge, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I see. We'll develop that out a little more, too. So, let's see. Actually, I think we've got a pretty good cast here. So I want to repeat. This is the alcoholic, right? To drink is to die, correct? So, we got Xena. We know what Xena is all about. Mama, right? Know what Mama's all about. Sex kitten, we know what she's about. Wife, we know what wife's about. Miss AA. We can almost hear what she's going to say already. And, of course, this is career woman. I am my money, I am my career, correct? So here's what happens. Are you sure? Did you go to anger? Well, you probably did quickly, right? You okay? Who was crushed?
The wife, the mother.
Okay, let's start.
The wife, and okay. The mother.
Okay, because I was thinking to myself when I was told this need. I've done this. See, it's just I've been her. I was trying to think of who was impacted first, and
he's been her and him.
Yeah, I think the husband took the full brunt first. So you're the wife. Right? And keep in mind, normally what I would do is I would take the alcoholic also, and I would put the alcoholic back behind each stage character. Because what's going to happen is who they are, what defines them, their state of being, it's completely tied into her being married to a man who's loyal and faithful. Get it? And now we have some new information. So imagine that you have just heard that he is having an affair. What is your reaction to that?
How could you do that to me? I gave you the best years of my life, you son of a bitch.
And I imagine there would have been just to even touch more passion to that. Now, I want you to think about this. When this happened, in order for her to be, to exist, she needs a husband. His action said, pay attention. We get drunk, loaded, wind up in penitentiaries, kill people over this shit. His action said what to her? She doesn't exist. You are dead. She is fighting for her life, right? Okay, who was probably the second one that reacted? You had the wife first?
Mother.
Absolutely. What's your reaction to this news?
How could you have done this to me and the children? How could you have destroyed our family? How dare you? How dare you?
Yes, good.
Good, 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 good. Good, and you'll notice both their positions initially started out as victims, right? And in each of these stage characters, with exception of Xena, who has one objective, which is to relieve him of something, a lower part of his anatomy, they will vacillate between judgment and victimization. Go into your own experience. How many of you have had this, I've been cheated on? Raise your hands. And the rest of you are liars. Or you didn't know. Okay, so we saw the reaction from the wife, and then we saw the reaction from the mother. What was probably the third reaction? Was Zena starting to rear her head a little bit here?
Well, what's revenge? Where does, you know, that kind of...
That is Zena, yeah.
Zena was there.
Okay, so now that those two have shared in their way, and you notice theirs was a touchy anger, but some victimization, right? How could you do this to me? I've been married to you all these years. I've done all this stuff for you, and of course, Mama. Now, what do you have to say about this?
Oh, God. Don't be.
What's Zena going to do? Have you ever been in this position?
Yes.
Well, you know what to say.
You fuck.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd chop your dick off. I'd probably retaliate.
Yeah.
I'm going to hurt you just like you hurt me, you bastard.
Yeah.
And then I hope you die. I want to watch you bleed.
This is real stuff here.
You're gonna fucking die.
You're dead,
yeah.
Motherfucker.
Yeah.
Now,
that's inventory.
That's inventory. Now, let's see. So, at some point in time, we're not quite ready for her yet. This little sexual energy over here, because see, I'll tell you why. Something has to happen here. When he had an affair with another woman, what did he say to her? Bingo. She's fighting for her life. Now, Zena is going to give her a little juice. See? Zena's going to start rapping to her, but what is your initial reaction to all this, to this fact that he had a sexual affair with another woman?
Devastated.
Yeah,
hurt, feel unattractive, feel ugly.
Bingo.
Disgusting, non-existent.
Yeah, not fast enough, tall enough, buns aren't tight enough, blah, 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 right?
I think she's got another belief.
Huh?
No. He just lost the best he ever had.
Yeah.
Right?
But we're not there. I want to show you something. Your initial reaction to stuff, we've all been through this, is going to start out. It's going to act like it's a little bit of anger. It's almost shock, and it normally starts out as victimization, with the exception of Zena, because Zena don't know that. But think of your initial one, right? The wife, right? You know, how dare you do this all these years? It's a victimization stance, right? You did it to me. And then the mother, you did it to me. And now we have Miss Sexuality. You follow me? I'm not enough. I'm not enough. Now, Zena starts to stir that anger, retaliation, right? Starts to stir the pot here, because they'll all wind up having two faces. Now, were you guys in business together?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. So now we've got Miss Career Woman. Now, of course, keep in mind the reality of this. When you hear that your husband and business partner, who's also happens to be your business partner's, had an affair, that's probably going to have an impact on your pocketbook, correct? So what's your reaction to this?
Oh, my God. How are we going to do this? Yeah. Get things together? He's probably going to take everything. Okay. What am I going to do to live on? Who's going to feed the kids?
Good.
Who's going to pay the bills?
Good.
Now, I want you to keep something in mind. She's been by herself when she had this experience, and all this stuff's going on. Follow me? She's by herself, right? Where were you at when you heard this information?
In London.
Okay, you were in London. But you get it? All this stuff goes on in your head, and you just shift. You're shifting from one to the other, right? Okay, now, of course, now we're going to hear from the spiritual woman. See? Who has deep understanding, compassion, and what's that standard line the spiritual woman throws out? You know, they're just... So what is your reaction to this?
Oh, my God. What am I supposed to do here?
No.
God, please guide me. Tell me what to do. I got to call my sponsor. I got to run to a meeting. I got to read the big book. I got to get on my knees. And all this stuff is going on all at the same time on top of all of this other stuff. And I don't think I could do this. I don't know if I could handle this. I don't know if I could stay sober through this. But I'll try.
And how will your denial show up? How would your denial show up being the spiritual woman? You're a spiritual woman, right? So what have you learned in AA about people who do things?
He's spiritually sick. He needs to go to AA. He needs a program. He needs to call his sponsor. He needs to stop drinking. He needs to go to Sexaholics Anonymous.
Zena's real clear what he needs. So this is what happens. And behind all this, because this is painful stuff. You've been through it. This is painful stuff. We're having a lot of fun, but this is painful, painful, gut-wrenching stuff. Because my sense of identity, who I am, is coming out here. And this is an act that has me fighting for my life. And I assure you, if the pain gets bad enough behind every one of these stage characters, or if the fear gets bad enough, is this alcoholic saying, screw it, let's go get drunk. Let's go get drunk. Let's go get drunk, right? Now there's another stage you're going to move to. We heard victimization initially. And I promise you, and Zena is a good, she's the one who will use her energy and fuel to do this, and ego, rebuilding quickly, right? So I don't know how long it took her, but not too far down the road, I want to go back to these same characters, but I'm looking for a whole nother response, right? I'm looking for a response from the sex kitten that goes something like this. God damn, there's 2.5 billion men out there, rock and roll. He wasn't that good anyhow. You know that little cutie down the bar? Let's go, baby. God, buy some lingerie. Yeah. Break out the Kama Sutra, rock and roll. Follow me? So that's one piece, right? Mother's going to have another response from an aggressive standpoint. It's going to be me and the kids. See how that looks? I'm going to present to the world I'm a single mother. Got my chest stuck out. I'm a single mother. See? Guy cheated me. I'm a single mother. Right? See?
What does Zena do to the next lover that the sex kitten has?
Follow me?
I'm going to tear that motherfucker up. There's only so many ways you can say some things, right? I'm going to fuck him up.
And fairly quickly, probably... An attorney had a little chat with the career woman, so what would you sound like now?
Oh, well, I really need money, and I've never done anything like this before, and my bank is empty, and I need to take care of the kids, so I really need to have the whole business.
See, and... I don't know how long did it take for all this just to play out.
It's still playing out.
Okay, how long ago did it start?
6 years ago.
Do you see what she deals with? You see, during the course of a day, she deals with, in that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancy to real, has the power to kill.
And if she doesn't see her troubles within that situation were of his own making, and she waits around holding her breath for him to make amends or change, woo.
See?
It'll be a long wait.
See, and this is the tragedy of the ego. This is why resentments is the number one offender. Can you imagine the inventory? Look at what we've seen off a few words. He had an affair on me. Look at the impact. Look how she experiences this mentally and emotionally. Right? Look at the up and downs just of the career woman, the money. Oh my God, what are we gonna do? We're in business together. Some bitch, I'll kick you, just back and forth. And the wife, my God, what she's gone through, I wasted all those years, you know, how could I have been so dumb, and you know, And then the, you know, the sexual energy piece, feeling, you know, it's about, because everything's about us, right? You know, so it's about me, it's about me, it's about me. I'm talking the initial reaction, not down the road a little bit when she's out buying lingerie and Kama Sutra, but, you know, and then the spiritual woman, you got combinations of things. One is, well, he's a sick man, and forgive and forget, and all that stuff, and Zena's hollering in her ear, screw that, kill him. And she's conflicted. You follow me? And you if you've gone through a divorce, you know what I mean? You'll do your best, and you're trying to get along. The next thing you know, you both lose it, say some of the most horrendous, horrible things to each other over the phone. What do you think that's all about? See?
So, question. Every one of those personalities has self-esteem, pride, ambition, security, personal relations, sex relations, and pocketbook.
Yeah.
That were hurt, threatened, or interfered with.
Because, see, this is such a beautiful one because these characters define so much of who she is, and this act, him having an affair, was life-threatening to every single one of them. Let me tell you the truth in this kind of stuff. About a year ago, my pal Floyd from Houston, Texas, he sends me an article, about a half a page write-up. And the story is of a fairly prominent dentist in Houston, Texas, who basically came home and said to his wife, I want a divorce. I'm going to go with another woman. And it was somewhere around 3 to 6 months after that, the wife took a gun, killed their two children, and killed herself. And I'm reading this article. And here's what the article says. She didn't work, so she was a wife. She was a devoted mother, a devoted member of the church, and loved her home. And this man came home, and in one sentence, the four things that identified every part of her being, he said, did not exist. And the power of this is 3 months later, she killed those two children and killed herself. This is real. You experience the third column as a state of being. Do you get it? You experience it. This therein lies the tragedy of the ego. You see why resentments are the number one offender? You see what's just played out here? You see why the book says we uses the word permit, says we can't afford the luxury of this? Can you imagine what this woman's gone through for 6 years behind this? If you don't know how to write inventory, you can get free of this. I have my own experience with this. One of my exes, whose name was Carla, ran off with a man I used to sponsor to Montana. You want some inventory? I'll give you some inventory. Now I want to tell you how this works. About 15 months later, they came back. 2 months after that, he came to me and made amends, and I wound up taking him through the steps again. Now, I didn't stay married to her, but we made amends, and she still calls me as a spiritual advisor today. You see? That's getting drunk stuff. You know what I'm saying? See, because I love that woman. If I didn't have this process, I'd have been crazy. See? But this stuff is very real. You see how real this is? You all got your own experience. You start to see what you're up against. You follow me? All these different states of being. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancy real, has the power to kill. Let's give them all a hand. Let's take a break. Okay, I'm Mark, alcoholic. Did you learn anything from that visual exercise with Theater of the Lie?
Yes.
Good. It really shows you what you're up against with the resentment, doesn't you? What I do want to tell you something. You know, there's a line in the Fear Inventory that we're in the world to play the role of God as a sign. And there is a state of consciousness that we've talked about in the 10th, 11th step in which you can play the role that God has assigned, but you are not attached to the role. And what that means is you can drop it in 30 seconds. You're not attached to the role. The role does not define you. You'll work with the role for as long as you're in the role. And when it's over, and you're right on to the next one. You're in a one-act play, and you know it. You see the difference? You see the difference in that whole thing? See, her response could have been, God bless you, go in peace. Boom, spun, moved. Cease fighting anything or anybody, right? See the difference? But Theater of the Lie opened me up to what I'm up against with my ego and my self-will and my selfishness. And why I seem to have gone through so much of my life, literally fighting for my life, at work, in relationships, unbelievable stuff. And it brought a lot of freedom into my life. It made writing inventory fun. Matter of fact, when we first got introduced to this and really began to have a lot of fun writing inventory, and I mean fun, we would ask each other, who's mad? You know? And we started to have a lot of fun with those roles, and our life got lighter. And I'll give you an example real quick of how this translates. When I got sober, I went to work for this company. I'd worked for them about 8 to 8.5 years. And when that job ended, I almost got suicidal. I was so identified with that job and did not even know it. Sound asleep to that. I was working 60 to 70 to 80 hour weeks. And I thought that job defined who I was. And when I wasn't doing that job, I can't even tell you the depression that set in. I literally thought I was dying, and I didn't have a clue why. I still had these, quote, other components of my life, I thought. But when you're working in something 60, 70, 80 hours a week, and you're sound asleep, and you think it defines you, and it ends, you'll experience it as fighting for your life. A lot of people committed suicide behind careers ending. So, pay attention to some of what we did. If you'll work with it, I think you'll also find that writing inventory not only would be easier, but could be a little bit more fun for you. But I hope most of all you see what you're up against in a daily basis with a self-will intact, and what the big book means, what it says when it says, in that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancy real, has the power to kill.
Thanks, Mark. I'm Joe. I'm an alcoholic. Let me say one thing about the guided meditation that we did before we said the third step prayer together. A lot of people think that the tools of how to work with the doctor's opinion and Bill's story and there is a solution and more about alcoholism and the chapter to the agnostic and everything up to the third step, because really, it's really just a series of considerations that would help you fully concede to your innermost self, A, B, and C. And then, are you convinced? The first requirement, the decision, the prayer. And I did that with you because I wanted to say, I think the most important work after you've done, let's say for a better lack of a better term, you've done the mechanical work in those chapters. You've marked statements into questions and what you relate to in Bill's story and what your resistance was and how that changed when you were done with step one, and you've done what you've done with We Agnostic, and you've done what you've done with the four parts of the third step. A lot of people think saying the third step prayer every day is taking the third step. No. That's like thinking that admitting you're powerless over alcohol, you've taken the first step. But we all know there's a lot more to the first step. We all know there's a lot more to the third step than just... The prayer is the affirmation of the end. And isn't it funny? I've always thought it ironic that after the prayer, they say, we thought well before taking this step. And that's what we've done up to the moment we did that prayer this weekend. We've thought well about everything up to that prayer. We didn't want that statement after the prayer to be a surprise. We wanted you to think well before we did that prayer. But the prayer's not the decision. A lot of people think taking the third step is turning their will and their life over to the care of God. You hear it all the time. It's just a decision. And we saw this weekend, the decision comes before the prayer. And as a matter of fact, the third step promises come before the prayer. So what are the third step promises based on? The third step promises are based on everything up to and including the third step decision. The prayer is an affirmation that those promises have begun. So I think the mechanical work is important, but I think the most important work, what we call in my home group, is the prayerful work. When you go back to those questions you marked, when you go back to the truth about what you're related to in Bill's story, when you go back to how and if the resistance has changed in 9 to 16, when you go back to does my experience abundantly confirm, slowly, slowly, in prayer, in a contemplative way, each of those considerations we went through in the guided meditation. A lot of people have trouble finding where are the first two steps. Well, doesn't it make sense, and I know this is really complicated, that everything up to the third step could be one and two? it's a hard idea to grasp, but because from then on it's pretty simple. Now we're at step three. This is step four, five, on and on. Okay. Now, if I'd like you to imagine this. Let's go to, I'm really going to try and do this. Let's go to page 64. God help me do this. I'm opening the book. I'm right here in the book. We're on page 64. last paragraph. What Mark covered in the theater of the lie is from 1, 2, 3, 4, we might as well read the paragraph. Resentment is the number one offender. That's what he was showing you. He showed you how it destroys more alcoholics and their personalities than anything else. From resentment, I think it's important in this book to know what it is in any sentence. And I would like to pose a question, what some of you think it is and how it works. A lot of people will say it's how the program works. I have a different experience with how it works. I think it and how it works is how God works through this program. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease, for we have not only been mentally and physically ill, we know what those are now, mental obsession, physical craving. We also know what the spiritual malady is. We're not going to skip over that. It ain't a twofold disease. It's a threefold disease. We've been spiritually sick. What is it called? The spiritual malady. A lot of people in my group in Santa Monica misinterpreted that for a long time, and they talked about a sick spirit. It is impossible for your spirit to be sick. What is within you is 100% divine. The spiritual malady is being shut off from that which is 100% spiritually divine. Your spirit can't be sick. Spirit can't be sick. Spirit is spirit. The malady is, the problem is that I'm shut off from it. And I live from my body, my mind, and my emotions. I'm dominated by three dimensions. We've entered a fourth dimension of existence. We've entered the world of the spirit. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. What did Mark cover? We listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. Column one. Stay in the first column till nothing more comes. People are people. I believe if the name comes, don't question it. Don't ever let any sponsor edit your inventory or your list. If it comes, it comes. It needed to come. You trust your prayer. You've done the work. You've made a decision. Make the list. Stay in the first column consciousness. That doesn't mean some other first columns might not come for the rest of, even before the fifth step. Might come during the second column, third column, fourth column, fear, this relationship inventory. I don't call the sex inventory anymore because I haven't had sex for a long time. By choice. I have a choice. Motherfuckers. Second column, we asked ourselves why we were angry. Institutions can be groups of people. I'm not going to start listing some of those groups of people because the wrong ones came to my mind just then. I'm in inventory. Principles or values and beliefs and stuff that's been pushed on you even in sobriety that you resent sometimes. Meeting makers make it. There's a great one. People that have to do the work. Don't even question if all you're doing is emptying your consciousness. And a really valuable tool for those of you that have been around that think it has to be a resentment to be on this list. A lot of you in this room don't live with deep-seated resentment anymore because you can't stand it for very long. Use some other words. Who's let you down? Who are you discouraged with? Who are you jealous of? Use other words to generate the first column. Let down by. Jealous of. Discouraged with. Let the list come. Don't question. Is it a major relation? Is it a major resentment? Right? If it comes, it comes. You're just asking. It's the prayer's even there. Where's the prayer? The prayer is there. No. It's a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which have been blocking us. That's the prayer. Dear God, please help me face and be rid of the things in myself which have been blocking me from you, myself, and God. Then what he laid out there was, so that's column 1 and 2. He was laying out where he found that in every case, self-esteem, pocketbook, ambition, personal relations, including sex, were hurt, threatened. Then there's a kind of a confusing paragraph because they repeat themselves a little bit. And he said opposite each name, self-esteem, which they've already given you, security, which is a new one, ambition, which is a new one, personal relations, which is repeated, sex relations, which had been interfered with. So they've given you three words to work with. When I resented so-and-so for such-and-such, did it hurt, threaten, or interfere with my self-esteem? Then you'll find pride. A lot of people don't write pride. It's all the way down at the bottom across from the wife, my wife, in the example. So you got self-esteem, pride, ambition, security, personal relations, sex relations, pocketbook. Do you always find all seven? Not always. Our group started to do a different thing with pocketbook. We looked at it as price. And we started to look at when she did such and such, did it hurt, threaten, or interfere with? Was there any price that I didn't want to pay? It's not always money. Emotional price. I wasn't willing to take the emotional responsibility to look at why. I think pocketbook, if you look at it as what price did you pay, leads right into the fourth column thinking. But we don't want to get complicated with that. And he laid out the third column. But keep in mind, if you go back through your life and you're thorough and honest, what he did was, and this is the line that helped the guys that first started writing out the third column, they got to this line, bottom of 65, and they read the line, when we were finished, we considered it carefully. And they said to themselves, well, the fourth column instructions are 2 pages away. What is it they want us to consider carefully now that we've done the first three columns? Well, should we be more specific with the first column? They talked about that. Should the second column be specific rather than wordy? They talked about that. Someone at the time in that kitchen was reading Gurdjieff, and Gurdjieff used to talks about 1,000 eyes and 1 ego. And somebody said, well, why don't we just answer why after self-esteem? And that's how writing out the third column came about. When I resented her for leaving me, and it affected my self-esteem, they started to ask why. And they found out the big lie. And the big lie is this. When you think it's low self-esteem, it's usually rooted in high self-esteem. When you think it's high self-esteem, it's usually rooted in low self-esteem. Not to complicate it, if you can just put the 7 words the first time you're doing the work and you got a big first column, great. If you've been around, you want to try something new, you want to try something a little different, something that's come to me from my own experience. You know what we forget sometimes? At Chris, the guy that's going to speak tonight has a brother in Dallas, and they have a group, and at the beginning of the group, they read what we've all heard so many times, which I believe is on page 164, and it says in the second paragraph, our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we only know a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. But there's some people that are so locked into the words in the big book rather than the spirit. You mention one thing that you've experienced that's not word for word in the book, and they're like, they go crazy. And they forget the statement these people gave us when they ended the first 164 pages. Because I'll tell you this, there are people sitting here that have been doing the work 3, 4, 5 times longer than anybody had when the first 164 pages were printed. And more has been revealed constantly. Writing out the third column can only help. Helps you identify those personalities he laid out for you. Yeah. Keep in mind, keep this in mind. Don't ever forget this. Nobody had more than 4 years when they claimed to be recovered. Nobody had more than Bill got sober in 35, am I right? The book was published in 39, right? The first 164 pages haven't been changed since 1939, right? So, the writers of this book, nobody had 5 years. There are people with 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 55, 60 years doing what's in this book. We know them. We know a lot of them. You know a lot of them. More has been revealed. Don't get locked into the Word. You're looking for the Spirit. Share where it takes you. Right? Then they make an interesting statement, which I never got past in years and years and years of therapy and becoming a therapist. The farthest I ever got in therapy was the first 3 columns. What's the problem today, darling? Well, I'm getting in touch with some anger that when I was 10 years old, my dad was 70 because he was 60 when I was born, and he wasn't there when I was 10 for the baseball games, and he didn't show up for this, and he didn't teach me that. Well, how did it make you feel? And we would sit there and do column 1, 2, 3, column 1, 2, 3, column 1, 2, 3, and most therapists, all you've done is buy a good friend who needs to stay in business. And for them to stay in business, you can't get free. But there are some therapists who will help you get free. Some of us have been to some that say, darling, that's about all I can do. You belong in Alcoholics Anonymous. God bless them. God bless therapists that are still in therapy. God bless teachers that still are students. God bless sponsors that are still sponsees. You got some sponsors that don't have sponsors anymore. My home group in Santa Monica is filled with them. They think their sponsor left for some place. Lady came out recently to do a retreat for them from Denver. She realized she'd never had a sponsor. She'd been through the work umpteen times. Her husband had been her sponsor, and they've recently divorced. She's wondering about sponsorship. She's been through the work with all kinds of people, men and women. Someone in Denver told her that the group in Santa Monica she was going to do a retreat for knew a lot about sponsorship. She gets out there, 30 people from my home group at a monastery sitting in a circle, and she told them that she was interested in finding out about sponsorship for the first time in 30 years. She'd been through the work umpteen times, and that she heard this group knew a lot about sponsorship. They went around the room. Nobody in the room had a sponsor anymore. His Holiness the Dalai Lama. He's still a student. When the student is no, when the teacher is no longer a student, it gets really scary, right? But not very many therapists, unless they're directing you toward God and truth, will ever go farther than to conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. And that was true for me. That's as far as I usually got. What's the outcome of that? People will continue to wrong you, and you'll stay angry. Sometimes it'll even be remorse. And then you'll just turn it inward, which is self-centeredness. Then you're mad at yourself. But the more you fight and try to have your own way, the worse matters get. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumphs were short-lived. Is it clear to me that when my life includes deep resentment, it led only to futility and unhappiness? Then it tells you what happens when you do that, and it's fatal. Now, before we get into turning back to the first 3 columns to find the key to the future, that sounds pretty important. Mark always says that. The next part of the inventory is a key to the future. Key to the kingdom. One of the keys to the kingdom. I'd like to describe something. Imagine the scenario that he painted for you right out here. You had the wife that was angry. You had the different personalities. Now imagine that over here he would have put the husband.
Or the boyfriend.
Or the boyfriend. You know, the motherfucker that did the cheating, right? Right? If we had him over here, right? if we had the bastard over here. Now, he would have had some kind of resentment. Maybe she drove me away. Now, isn't it interesting? This is a new piece I just saw not too long ago at his place. If you have two people in a relationship, and a lot of you are, this is tricky, and you really got to see it and having written some inventory to see it. Her second column would be his fourth, and his second column would be her fourth. She's writing the lie for her is the truth for him, and he's writing the lie for him is the truth for her in the second column when you got two people on the same path. It doesn't help each other person. It's just a nifty thing to think about. But maybe if she read her second column to him and they were sharing inventory together, it might help him with his fourth column. He was selfish. He was this. He was that. He was this. That's her lie. That's what she's stuck in, but that's what he needs to see. So here's the picture. He's got his own resentment. There'd be personalities around him too. Mr. AA, Rambo, the businessman. Now, why were they having trouble with this personal relationship? Imagine this picture. One morning, the businessman who has a 9 o'clock, 11 o'clock, 4 o'clock, 7 o'clock appointments wakes up to the sex kitten. She wants to make love. He's got to make business. So they're like this. And remember, what we're describing here is when you are not at one. You're not at one. She's resentful for this. He's resentful for that. They're blocked. They're not at one. The committee comes to the surface. The meeting starts. Different chairman every day. Next morning, his Romeo wakes up to her businesswoman. They're like this. He wants one thing. She wants another. They're not at one. And the only time you have a good day is when the two right personalities wake up at the same time. You see it? You see it? Romeo has to wake up to Juliet, right? Or they might have a wonderful day if Mr. AA woke up with Mrs. AA, and they're going to have like an AA day, right? Whatever that would be, you know, they're going to just live and let live, right? They're going to go to four meetings or something. I don't know what they're going to do. Maybe they would even pray and meditate together. That'd be pretty cool, right? Pray and meditate together with the closest person in your life. Ooh, God, we can't do that. We keep our spiritual programs separate. He's one of the closest people in my life. We love to pray and meditate together. I don't want to meditate with some strangers, you know. I like to. It's usually showing off, though, when you meditate in a group. Who's sitting right? There's always the perfect stool. I don't want to get into all that today, though. My buddy, where's my buddy? He knows about that. And in any kind of sangha or anything, there's always the... I'd be in the back with these Tibetan boys playing tic-tac-toe and throwing spitballs in the meditation room. But they got to wake up on the right day. And every one of them has a different belief about the resentment. Rambo wants to do this just like the ones he laid out, right? So they all have different beliefs going on. They all got different personalities waking up at different days. And they're having trouble with a personal relationship. Everyone's going to, each one of the personalities is going to have a different reaction, right? There's another reason they have trouble in that personal relationship. So how do you come to one? How do you come at one? How do you get free? And the man that shared this with us talked about watching a friend of his who was 26 years sober who became a speaker. And you know, real speakers never turn down an AA request. That's the motto among speakers. Fuck the family, fuck your children, screw everything else up, but don't turn down an AA request. They're not free. They don't operate by intuition. Am I supposed to go? Am I not supposed to go? They got to go. And this guy became a speaker. And he was told by his doctor to be in the hospital at 6 p.m., but he had to go speak. He needed an appendicitis operation. He went to speak. His appendix burst. He was put in the hospital. They had nothing for that back then, peritonitis or whatever it's called. It took him 16 days to die. This man hadn't done this work. This man hadn't seen those personalities. And our friend got to go sit with that man. He was in and out of consciousness. And he would come to and he would say things like, you know, I wasn't the greatest father in the world, but you know what? I wasn't the worst either. And another personality would be smashed. And you know, I wasn't the greatest AA member, but I wasn't the worst, and I did the best I could. And another one would die. And we get to do that right here, in the grace of God. That man had to die on his deathbed before he got free. Because you know what the ego wants? The ego loves if you're either a piece of shit or the greatest boyfriend in the world. It loves it. You know what's a really hard third column to do on the back of the page after you've seen the lies on the first page? Write an honest third column. Your ego will kick up more than anything in the third column. Hey, I'm just a guy trying to do the best he can. Makes mistakes. Boy, your ego will hate mediocrity because it loves it. It wins if you're a piece of shit or the greatest. It wins either way. It's a no-win situation on it, one end of the scale or the other. Right? We get to get free of those. So how do they start to die? How do they start to die? Now imagine this. This is another reason they're having. And here's what will start to happen. Mark's going to start to talk about the fourth column, but here's what will start to happen. So you got the first three columns on the front page. I believe if you got five resentments toward Charlie, you should do five pages. One resentment per page. Give yourself space. You ever seen people you were working with try to cram like 10 resentments on one page and 10, the ego won't give them any room. They think like paper is gold or something, right? Just another piece of paper. I had to put all 10, you know, cram all the third columns, all the, because you can't, the ego doesn't want you to see nothing. Put one name and one resentment. If you got 10 resentment towards the guy, 10 pages. First three columns on the front, turn the page over, start to use the prayer. This is a sick person, like myself. I love when people quote that prayer like, this is a sick person somehow different than me, and they're automatically down there and you're up here. Remember, the book says, this is a sick person like myself. How can I show them a kindly and tolerant view? How would I treat a sick friend? How would I want to be treated? God save me from being angry. And you start to write. Now, the trap they asked us to watch out for was, when you start to see truth, be careful the ego doesn't go, so now I'll. And you'll just recreate a new third column in yourself in your own image. Example. And the egos don't, and the personalities don't get smashed. They just get up and change seats. Imagine the personalities that he had right over here. Okay, the sex kitten starts to write fourth column. I was like this, I was like this, I was like this, I was like this. The ego kicks in and she becomes a nun. She just changed seats and the whore becomes a nun. The nun becomes a whore. The passive person goes take a class in assertiveness training. The Rambo becomes a little more passive. And all they do is get up and change seats if your ego starts to play. So now I'll just... Don't use the fourth column to recreate yourself in your own image. Let the truth be the truth. How do you know what God wants you to be? Right. Romeo turns into a monk, right? Oh my God, I'm right in the fourth column. Boy, look at how pushy I've been. Look at what a mean son of a gun. So now I'll just, and it's you recreating yourself. And all you'll end up with is a new third column, and all those personalities in the circle around that person do is get up and change seats.
Talk a little bit about the fourth column. I want to talk about fear and sex inventory. On page 67 in the fourth column, and actually I want to use that piece of inventory we looked at for Theater of the Lie. But it talks about referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, first and second column. We're going to resolutely look for our own mistakes and pay attention to the word mistakes. That ties into an earlier statement earlier about that person is perhaps spiritually sick like me. See, if I'm asleep, dreaming, I'm awake, going through life driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, I'm going to make some mistakes, aren't I? The extent to which you are asleep to the fact that there is nothing but oneness is the extent to which you're going to make a lot of them. You're going to say and do things to other people because you have this sense of separation. You're going to take things personal because of your selfishness, etc., etc. It's the reason the big book uses the word mistakes. My experience is that the longer I've been sober and the more that I've done this work, the less mistakes I make. And I know that because there's a lot less amends that I need to make. That's why it uses the word mistakes. Remorse is spiritual pride. I make mistakes. Joe and I were laughing earlier when he left California. He made a couple mistakes, right? And someone said, well, what do you think about that? I said, oh, I think it's fantastic. You know, heaven forbid the Hawkster made a mistake. My gosh. You know, what a great thing. You know, we try and share the mistakes that we make. Current stuff. I was going to listen to an inventory not long ago, and a gentleman had never read to me before, so I know what's going on there. The ego's afraid. What will he think? And I said to him, how long have you been sober now? And he said, well, about 13, 14 years. I said, well, let me put your ego at rest. Oh, how are you going to do that? And I said, I've made more mistakes from 14 years sobriety to almost 20 than you made in your first 13. I guarantee it. He goes, oh, good. That does make me feel better. You know? So it's about that issue of mistakes. Now, here's what you're going to look at in the fourth column. Where have I been selfish? What actions of mine have been selfish? Dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened. Now, I want to go back to that Theater of Life piece of inventory, and I'm going to see if I can throw out some intuitive stuff. One of the ways in which I am selfish is, not only am I selfish, but I'm dishonest, is I really think that other people's actions are about me. And because of my selfishness, how things need to look and how I want things to turn out, if you just sit and you took that piece of inventory that we looked at in which a gentleman had an affair, one of the ways you could look at selfishness is it's pretty selfish of me to interfere with how another individual wants to live and conduct their life. Dishonesty. That action had anything whatsoever to do with me. Self-seeking. I want loyalty, I want respect, and I want it at all costs, regardless of how I've treated them. Fear, how I'll look. That's just a few pieces. If that was my piece of inventory, because I've written inventory like that, there were a lot more. My experience is your third and fourth column better make the second column disappear. Do you hear what I said? Your third and fourth column better make the second column disappear, because all your troubles are of your own making. This is your inventory, not theirs. And if your third and fourth column are not making the second column disappear, you need somebody to help you find the truth. Remember earlier? Big Book says that you and I made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. And it says we did that every time. You go back in the trail far enough, you're going to find where she made some decisions based on self, which later placed her in a position to be hurt. And so your second column begins to evaporate, or it turns and looks something like this. Based on my behavior, I left him no alternative. There's a shift. So that's what my experience is with that third and fourth column. They better make the second column disappear, or you're never going to get free. You're still going to think it's about you. And then there's situations in which the second column is just the second column. The book says they're spiritually sick. Okay? So you're going to let go of that too, aren't you? See? And it talks about you're going to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where are we to blame? See, we always have a part. This inventory is ours, not the other man's. And then when we see our faults, we listed them. So I like to write out a very, very thorough fourth column. Then I like to take a look at the faults that were created behind that, or the harm, and that becomes essential relative to the ninth step that we're going to make. Does that make sense? We place these things before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly, and we're willing to set the matter straight. I want to talk a little bit about fear. It's been my experience and the experience of every alcoholic I've ever worked with that the very fabric of our being is interwoven with fear. I think there's another term for that. It's called generalized anxiety disorder. all of us have it. Some of us are just diagnosed with it. But and you know, when I got sober, I didn't realize that. I didn't know the fabric of my being was interwoven with fear because I drank to cover up all the fear. See, when you're going through life being driven by self-will, playing God, then you've had to rely on yourself. And if you were such a failure at doing that as I was, then how could you not be consumed with fear in every single area of your life? So I want to talk a little bit about the fear inventory. The book's going to use the word it a lot, but talks about this short word fear somehow touches every aspect of our life. Fear is an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence is shot through with fear. And I like to have people work with that a little bit. What does that mean to you experientially? The fabric of your existence is shot through with fear. And what I want them to get to experience is how every single area of their life, from their career to relationships to AA to sobriety to God, the very fabric of their being becomes interwoven with fear. Their agnosticism, their current agnosticism. Because if we don't identify the fear, then you're not going to be able to identify the areas in which you're trying to rely on self, saying you believe in God. It's a trap. You've got to be able to find out the areas in which you're into self-reliance. So you've got to start taking a look at this fabric of my existence, being shot through with fear. Now pay attention to the next sentence. Fear will set in motions, trains the circumstances. Fear becomes a motivation for going into action. Remember, we go through life being driven by 100 forms of fear. Fear set in motion, trains the circumstances, which then brings us misfortune we feel we do not believe. A lot of times in the resentment inventory, you're going to see that fear is what set the ball rolling in terms of what you looked at. It says, but did not we ourselves set the ball rolling? Sometimes we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. Fear seems to cause more trouble. See? Give you an example. This can show up in one of my relationships was fear of being alone. So you meet someone. Now, I had a fairly clear idea because I ask a lot of questions. Just seems to be my nature. And I ask a lot of questions about this woman. This is several years ago. And I got a real clear picture. Single spaced about one page. And every one of them was a red flag. But I liked her. And she was God's will. See? So to make a long story short, that started a relationship. Fear is what got it going, and fear is what brought it to its knees. See, I mean, I didn't know what was worse, the fear of being alone or the fear that she was going to stay. You follow me? So fear set in motion trains the circumstances which bring me misfortune that I feel that I do not deserve. We need to classify fear with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. Joel will talk more about that. How many of you have ever stolen something? We all have. Did you make a conscious choice to steal something? If they're going to classify fear with stealing, is it possible that any time you and I are operating in fear, we in essence are making a conscious choice to operate in fear because we're relying on self? And you're once again going to see where your agnosticism is at play again. For you believers.
Because 10 and 11 are about deciding out of fear. And if you can decide out of fear, then you have to see that you've decided into fear. That's how it's like stealing.
Yep. So we're going to review these fears thoroughly, and we're going to put those fears on paper. Even though we have no resentment in connection with, and we're going to ask ourselves why we had fear. Book goes on to say, we have fear because self-reliance failed us. I've written a lot of different fear inventories. Probably the fear inventory that, in some respects for me, in which I see the most is, goes like this. Boil the fears down. You know, you could make a list, and it could probably be 200 of them. You boil it down to about 8 or 10 of them. Got to fear of living. Got to fear of dying. Got to fear of staying sober. Got to fear of getting drunk. Got a fear of, let's see, being alone. Got a fear of being with someone. I always do the opposite. Got a fear of failure. Got a fear of success.
You see what he's saying? If you end up with like 10 negative fears, being alone, in pain, drunk, and dead, take their exact opposites.
See, I'll give you an example of how this plays out. How many people other than me in sobriety have, with a lot of grace and power, really begin to build and reconstruct their life and then slowly trashed it? Okay. I'll tell you what my inventory showed me about that, is I had more fear of success than I did of failure. And because I was asleep to that, as I would be moving toward that, because of that fear, I would slowly begin to take a series of actions I was asleep to ensure that I was down in my comfort zone, which is failure.
And I spent a long time being more afraid of having power than remaining powerless and irresponsible. Because with power, I told this the other night, but I have some friends in San Francisco who started a group called Lopwads. And I said, what the hell is a Lopwad? And they said, lack of power is our dilemma. I said, well, if you all keep doing the work, in a few years you're going to have to change the name of the group. They said, to what? I said, Hopwad. They said, what's that? I said, having power is also a dilemma. Okay. Means responsibility, commitment, honesty. We're more afraid of that than remaining irresponsible and powerless.
So let's say that you put down, I have a fear of, well, let's just say being alone. That one shows up a lot, or being alone, abandoned, rejected. Those are the big three hit parade, I think. So let's say that I have a fear of being alone. Well, that's a whole other thing. But so that would be, Kyle, I have a fear of being alone. Okay, why do we have that fear? It hurts, right? Causes emotional pain. Why else? Why else do you have fears of being alone? Huh? She said, it feels like I don't deserve. Good. That's a good one.
Looks bad.
Oh, looks bad, right? Oh, you still don't have a mate, you know. Yeah, look like a loser. Okay, what else?
I'll drink.
See? I'm unlovable. Yeah, oh, I'm unlovable. See, we're writing why we have this fear, right? The fear is, why do I have such a fear of being alone? Anything else? Huh? Yeah, I don't exist if I'm alone. Okay? That's a pretty good list of reasons for that fear, right? Why I have that fear. It's a fear of being alone. Then the book says, well, and this is what you could call it a third column in the fear inventory. It says, wasn't it because self-reliance failed me? So here's what I like to do. How have I attempted to use self-reliance to treat this fear, to work with this fear? See? How have I used self-reliance? Playing God.
And there's the hardest piece. There's the hardest one for me to see. Took a lot of work, a lot of prayer. God showed me. Excuse me. It's easy to see in your first four-column resentment inventory that behind every resentment is really a mask to hide fear. So if resentment is a mask to hide fear, what is fear a mask to hide? Fear is a mask to hide that there's a lurking notion that you can rely on self where that fear is concerned. Just like we said with the first step. You go into the second step, afraid of drinking, there's a lurking notion that you can do something to keep yourself sober. If there's fear, there's an underlying reservation that self-reliance can do something about the fear. Mm-hmm. Fear is a mask to hide agnosticism and lack of faith. And imagine this cliche that you hear all the time. Faith and fear can't exist in the same place. Isn't that amazing? The one time you really need some faith, like when you're in fear, it can't be there. Faith better be there when I'm in fear. Yeah.
So you go back, and so we've got the fears being alone, all the reasons why we have this fear. How has self-reliance, how have I relied on self to deal with this, right? And you start to make your list. I make a ton of phone calls. I'm always starting and ending relationships. I have the TV on all the time. I have the answer machine all the time. I'm always in motion. I never stop. I'm going to meetings all the time, calling on the email.
You go to one of those meetings where they have the, what is it called, the Amish format? I don't know. The free, you know, free. Yeah, and spontaneous sharing. And there's a few moments of silence, and then somebody goes, I had to say something. I couldn't stand that silence, right?
And so you roll that out, how you've been trying to rely on self to deal with this fear of being alone. And then you go on a little bit further, next paragraph says, perhaps there's a better way. I think so. For now, I'm on a different basis. I'm on the basis of trusting and relying upon God. I'm going to trust infinite God rather than my finite self. I'm in the world to play the role that God assigns. And I've done this before. What role have I assigned myself in relationship to this fear? What role have I assigned myself? Because earlier on the book said, Mark, you got to quit playing God. So what role have I assigned myself? And the last thing I like to write out is, what would God have me be in relationship to this fear? So you might consider writing fear inventory in that fashion. But let's go on with a couple other things here. I'm in the world to play the role God assigns. Let's go back to theater of the lie. I submit to you that there's a state of consciousness in which she could still be in every one of those roles, but not attached to any one of them. Not attached to any one of those roles, but could still be those roles in the world to play the role that God has assigned. But the role does not define her, because she's experienced her true self, her beingness, her spirituality, if you will. And she's very clear that that does not define who she is. Why is that important? Because you and I live in a world of impermanence, in a constantly moving, evolving. You attach to anything except the moment, you will go through immense suffering. Immense suffering. So you play the role that God has assigned for as long as it's assigned in the one-act play. I live in a world of impermanence. You attach to God and God only. In a moment's notice, every single thing you can be attached to will be taken away from you. If you think that defines who you are, see what it's going to do? We talked earlier about that. The woman who killed her. You can see this in the paper. Every day you can see this stuff. These people that are some kind of role ends, and the experience is fighting for their life. It's a horrible way to live your life. It's a horrible way. Play the role that God has assigned. Don't attach to the role. Hell, when I drive out to the ranch and I drive through that front security gate and I got to put on that CEO hat, man, I'm in a one-act play and I just have a ball. Mr. CEO, yeah, shit, let's go, baby. You know, do what you got to do, and then I'll go down and I'm going to give some lecture on spirituality. Now we got this lecturer or teacher or some shit, I don't know what all you call it. So now I got another role, and you shift. See? You just shift into it. Because it's being done to you and through you. It's not you. You get done with that role, you know, and you drive out the gate and say goodbye to the lot man, to the CEO role, man. You're just driving, just being, see? And you get back home, and I go for a run. The jock, man, jock's going to go for a little run. You got another little role. Yeah, shake it, move it, man. Go up to home group. Mr. AA going to walk in. A beginner's meeting, you know. He's got some rap shit to say, you know, about the first step or something, you know. Cute little chickadee. Hi, how you doing? I'm doing just fine. How you doing, you know? And you see, you just shift and move, man. You go home and you watch a little TV and spiritual, man. You're going to pray and meditate, you know. yeah, zoom, home, you know. But did you see how free it is? You follow me, you know? You know, you go through life a free man that way. See, and it can end. It can end. I've had it happen. I've had stuff in a moment's notice, you know? The deal is you just, you know, I love the movie Heat, Robert De Niro. One of his mentors taught him something. Said, if you can't drop it in 30 seconds, he said, you better not have it in your life. You can't let go in 30 seconds. Man, I heard that. That's one of the most spiritual things I ever heard. He said, there's anything in your life you can't let go of in 30 seconds. He said, it'll kill you. Wow. Isn't that the truth? So back to the fear thing. Be in the world to play the role that God has assigned, not the role that you've assigned. The role that God has assigned. Do it with lightness. Have fun with it, right? See? Talks about the extent that I do as I think it would have me rely on him. I can match calamity with serenity. God bless you. Go in peace. Can you imagine what would have happened if she had said that to him? God bless you. Go in peace. Boom. Whole different deal. Early, and it goes on to talk about all men and women of faith have courage. Here's the definition. Trust their God. A lot of people talking about God nowadays, and I don't know how many of them trust their God. Do you trust your God? Do you trust your God? Instead, I'm going to let God demonstrate through me what God can do. Hell, from the first one of these to Joe and I ever did to the last one, and I can assure you if this was he and I's last one, it wouldn't bother either one of us. God has demonstrated through us what God can do. He and I don't have any capacity to sit up here and have a clue what you all need. We don't have a clue. You follow me? You see what I'm talking about? God demonstrates through us what God can do. We're manifestations, just like you. We're agents. So you're made in the image, manifestations of. There's no, you know, that false sense of separation goes away. And it gives you a tool when you're awake enough to know that you're experiencing fear. Remove the fear, God, and direct my attention, God, to what you would have me be. That's all I got for now. Joe's got some more stuff here, and then we'll take a break.
Couple things about the fourth column. If you find yourself in the fourth column and you start beating yourself up for what a rotten, terrible person you are, go back to the statement that's around the third step. You know where that statement is. Our troubles are basically of our own making. And stay on that until you see the positive side of the statement. Until you can go back to the fourth column with whatever one you were beating yourself up about and say, thank God my troubles with this situation were of my making. Thank you. Because if they were of her making or his making, they're going to have to do something for you to get free. They're going to have to come back, see the light, realize they were wrong, make amends. They're going to have to change. Sometimes you're writing about somebody who's dead, or at least you've killed them in your mind. They ain't coming back. They ain't going to. You wait for people in AA to make amends to you, you're going to have a long wait. I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous a long time. I can count on my hands and my toes how many AA members have ever made amends to me. You want to get free. Don't beat yourself up. The ego loves that. Don't beat yourself up in the fourth column. How many in this room have ever had the experience? You're in the fourth column and something comes off the end of your pen that didn't come from your mind and you never thought it before, right? I'm writing about my deepest resentment, the one that every therapist ever, what do they call it nowadays? My core issue. Oh my God, help me. Was always the hatred I had for my father. I'm in the fourth column. Off the end of my pen comes, the resentment was, I resent my dad because when I was 10, he was 70. He wasn't doing this and showing up for that or teaching me this. Write the third column. I'm in the fourth column. I'm starting to get free.